Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, we're back. We're black. We're brown. I'm Tiffany.
Hey, guys. Happy Brown Ambition Wednesday. It's Mandy.
So what shall we talk about today?
There's so many things. What can we start with? So did you hear the story about this? I was chuckling slash kind of inwardly crying about this. There was this worker on the DC Metro who had the audacity to eat her breakfast in between shifts. And some lady took a picture of her, called her out for it in person, and then tweeted to the Metro, to the Metro Twitter account in DC, complaining about this worker eating her breakfast because apparently they had implemented a recent rule, like no eating on trains. Okay. Which that's a rule pretty much on any metro, but yeah. If you gotta eat, you gotta eat. And tried to get this woman disciplined / fired.
Wow.
Black Twitter was not having it because it's a black female worker, in the morning having her breakfast, minding her own business. And this woman was not having it. She's not white. She's Jordanian American, I've heard. But still, the fact that you would call someone out for the breakfast, and then it just went viral on Twitter and people were really upset with her name is Natasha Tynes. She runs social media for the World Bank. You think people who run social media accounts would know better? Yes.
Oh, ooh.
And yeah. She's also an author of a forthcoming novel, which is one way to get publicity for your book, except for after all the controversy, the company that's distributing her book said they were going to stop and then called on her publisher to actually pull the book deal itself. So they are coming for her coin. And the Metro Authority actually responded to this controversy and said that, one, this woman's part of a union, and the union came out to bat for her and explained that there's really – if you've ever been in a subway station, where the hell do you think they're going to sit down and eat their breakfast or their lunch? Yeah. There's no break rooms. And there's also mice everywhere and insecticides, so there's not really sanitary conditions a lot of the times. And this woman happened to be on a delayed train trying to get to her next shift. And in order to be on time, she stayed on the train and just ate her breakfast. And so the union came to bat for her, and then the Metro Transit Authority said that the police had recently asked people to stop filing complaints about petty stuff, like people eating on trains and evading fares and stuff like that. So this was way overblown, and she got dragged pretty bad.
I mean, I don't know if she deserves to get her book pulled and stuff like that, because cancel culture sometimes can be too much, but I think what is the desired outcome? You want this poor woman? I mean, she wasn't defecating on the train. You know what I mean? Sometimes you have to ask yourself, from where did this? What did you want to happen to her? Did you want this woman who was eating to be fired? What kind of life are you living that is your aim? Why do you care? She wasn't smearing food all over the place. Clearly, any common sense human being is she works here. She's clearly working here on the train. So my assumption is this is the, I mean, nobody willingly says, I would love to eat on this potentially disgusting, germy train. You know what I mean? I just, well, bet you're going to learn today. you gonna learn today. I guess she learned. And
well, it was the fact that she was basically calling on the metro, the DC metro, to fire this person and to discipline her. And you're messing with a black woman's livelihood. And I think, you know, do I think that this the right action is for her to lose her book deal? Will that teach her a lesson? No, I feel like the bigger lesson is for her getting dragged on Twitter and being corrected, you know, and why it's wrong for her to call someone out like that. I mean, first of all, who's even awake in the morning, like trying, like worry the worker's response to the woman when she talked to her and was like calling her out at the moment for eating on the train. The woman apparently told her, worry about yourself, which is exactly what she should have been doing.
Worry about yourself. Oh, isn't that the little video about the little girl, right? She's literally like three, right? And she's trying to buckle her own little seatbelt. And her mom's like, you need help? She said, no, leave me alone. Worry about yourself. So take a tip from the three-year-old. Worry about yourself.
Well, Natasha has learned a lesson. You know, my biggest fear is tweeting something and getting fired. Like, that is my fear as a person who, you know, journalist, we use Twitter all the time. I've actually just pulled back on how much I tweet because it is so easy to just like, and especially if you get addicted to the instant gratification of people liking and retweeting you, you just want to like please them and you want to write things that are witty and funny and, you know, off the cuff and whatever. And you get addicted to that. And then sure enough, you're going to tweet something stupid or inappropriate or insensitive. And then it's out there in the world and you can even delete it like this woman did, but people still can grab screenshots.
Yeah. You know, and also too, like the thing is, here's the thing, like, yeah, I don't believe in posting people I don't know on social media. I just think that's so harmful. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing that like I'm taking a selfie and you happen to walk behind me, but to take a picture of you to shame you, even if I'm taking a picture and I'm like, oh my God, so pretty or so cute. I don't even do that unless we're like taking a picture together. You know, like, or like, say if you're speaking or something like that, but like to secretly take a picture who's like, ooh, secretly on the train, she's slaying. I don't even do that because you don't know who someone is. And, you know, maybe they have someone who's looking for them, that's looking to harm them. I just think that that's what you get, honestly. And I mean, you're going to learn today. I know she's home like, wait, you know, when I was a kid, I'm not going to lie, I was a big tattletale, right? When I was like in kindergarten and in first grade, I could not understand why I would go and tell the teacher and she would say, Tiffany, nobody likes a tattletale. I thought I was doing my civic duty. I was like, but, and I didn't really understand, you know, until I got a little bit older and I realized that like, you're like, one, the teacher's like, okay, so Jaheim touched the blue ball. It's fine. Like, girl, it's not the end of the world, first of all. And two, it's like, it's not your business unless someone's really getting hurt or something like that. And so it's like, this woman never got that kindergarten, first grade lesson of don't be a tattletale. Nobody likes a tattletale. And now Black Twitter had to remind you. So, okay.
another social media fail this week. Did you hear about, so the actress from Fresh Off the Boat, Constance Wu, she is getting all kinds of insane press right now because Fresh Off the Boat was one of the first in a long, long time sitcoms to feature a majority Asian American cast. So it was a huge show for, I forget which network it's on, but it's been on for I think like 4 or 5 seasons now, and it was just renewed for its 6th season. And you know, with sitcoms, there's like dozens of episodes and it takes up an actor's, you know, most of the year for them to film the sitcom. But they're also incredibly lucrative. And if you're on a sitcom that gets syndicated, you just make money on money on money forever. But anyway, Constance she sent out some tweets with like some swear words in them saying how upset she was that her show was renewed because she's been unable to take a project that really fulfilled her artistic, you know, passions. And she thought that was fine to share with the world of working people who follow her, and immediately got dragged for being insensitive to the crew that works on her show, like the blue collar workers working on her show, her other cast, like on being ungrateful for the show that launched her career. You know, she starred in Crazy Rich Asians, which was that big movie. When was that, last summer, that came out, romantic comedy with an all Asian cast, you know? So she's kind of got the show to be thankful for the career that as a, you know, actor that she has. And that was how she responded. So baby girl also got dragged. Just don't tweet. Just get a diary.
I guess, you know, I'm not here to judge because I'm like, God forbid, I'm not going to lie, I've seen people that I know get dragged viciously, and I've gone through my Twitter But then I was like, girl, after like, you know, 12 pages scrolling, I'm like, I can't do this. But I think to myself, like, have I ever tweeted or Facebooked or Instagram something problematic? There's only two times that I said I got dragged on IG. Once was I said I had a sign. It said cosign and it had a line through it. And I was like, don't cosign. Cosigning is rarely a good idea. And that, you know, that you, I don't think people understand you have to take full responsibility for that person's loan. Surprisingly, I mean, like, of course, a lot of people were like, yeah, but people were mad at that. I was like, okay, you're mad because co-signing leaves you, you know, financially responsible. I was surprised. People were like, well, some of us can't get a car if we don't get a co-signer. I'm like, ma'am, that is the point. That is the point. Yeah. I mean, I understand that some folks need co-signers because they're like, I'm not able to. But that, what I'm saying is the fact that you need one is puts the other person in financial harm's way, because what it really means is that you really can't afford the thing that you're getting. And it's likely that that person's going to have to pay for it for you. And so, and I said, it's rarely a good idea, not never, ever, ever, because I know there's some extenuating circumstances, but I remember that was one time I kind of got dragged. People were like, this is irresponsible. I'm like, what?
They were just mad because like their auntie or their uncle, whoever they were going to ask for money, probably follows you. You're so not helping my case.
I know. I was like, so I was surprised, but I kept it up because I was like, I didn't say anything offensive. I said, you know, I kept it up. I was like, well, I understand you being upset because maybe your dad co-signed for you 10 years ago and it worked out. Because I'm not going to lie, Superman asked me to co-sign when we were dating and I said no. He was mad. And guess what? I was like, okay, the answer was still no. So he got over it and so will people. And then second thing I posted, it wasn't, I didn't really get dragged for it, but it was like this, like, this picture of like, I guess a woman, it was like a meme of like a silhouette of a woman, stages of pregnancy, like 1 month, 2 months, all the way to, you know, 9 months. And it was like, it's, when is it ever good, great to ask a woman if she's pregnant? And it was like, none of these times, you know?
Yep.
And so, you know, and so, they were just like, you know,
wait, you got dragged for that?
Yeah. Well, not dragged, but people were like, I just said, you just don't know what people are going through. You know, when, and so just to not, I mean, I get it, you know, because I mean, who's not ever not curious when you see a woman's belly, you're like, oh, she's pregnant. I get it. But many times that people are going through something and it can be really difficult. I had a miscarriage like, 2 years ago. And I remember on social media, everyone was like, ooh, girl, I see you. I know you're pregnant. I was like, actually, no, the baby died, but thanks. And I get it. I mean, no one was asking maliciously and that wasn't what it was about, but it was just so many people were like, I know you're pregnant. I see. I know. And I'm like, oh my, I literally had to just like log off because it was like, oh my gosh, like I'm not pregnant anymore. Like, you know, so I just, you know, so I wasn't dragged for that, but definitely a lot of people were like, I think that's unfair. Someone actually said, in that post, like something like, well, my mother told me to, if I'm curious to ask, I'm like, your mother did not say.
Your mother's wrong. Yeah, listen, like, it's about being empathetic and not judging people. Like, I think I'll teach my future kids that, to not judge. You never know what's going on in someone else's life before you snap that photo, you know, tweet about them, make a mean tweet about them. You
ask questions
it's
of
just
people that
not
you're not
worth it. You're witty. You're not really
exactly.
Your wittiness is not worth it.
It's not. I mean, and just think about, like, you know, I always think about when I post, you know, I have never had to post something that, no, I won't say never. I mean, not that I can remember that I have felt like, ooh, I should remove this because this is really like crazy. Like I said, you know, the co-signing thing, people were mad. I'm like, but they could stay mad because I wasn't wrong and I wasn't being judgmental. I was trying to be helpful. But I just think that sometimes we post without thinking, but I don't know what concept we was thinking. I mean, what like universe would that be okay?
You think we're going to feel sorry for you? Did you want sympathy, honey boo boo child? Like, right? You have to think about how people will perceive that you are a wealthy person and in a career that is very glamorous, you know, making tons of money, and to complain about the fact that you have a job when it was also like, this is what's so terrible. It's also the week when all the other shows get canceled and, you know, you see all these headlines of all these shows that get canceled and then she's out here complaining about hers being renewed. So yikes. She's like deleted some of the tweets and has gone undercover, but she,
yeah, you know, she's going to go on set now. They're going to look at her like, right? I hate you.
Like, come on. So that is your entertainment news. One last thing though that people are probably wondering about. We're talking about China trade war again. I thought this had kind of died down, but Trump and China just can't get along. Mr. Master Negotiator, just all we keep doing is increasing taxes on Chinese products and they're increasing taxes on our stuff in turn. And if you're wondering like what impact this has on you, there's a report that came out because we're talking about like so much of your stuff. All those appliances, Tiffany, that you just bought, China probably produced them. And I think washing machines are one of the products that like the big manufacturers of like household appliances have been rolling in cash because the extra tariffs that China has imposed on those products has led to price increases that have helped them out, but then gotten passed down to consumers. But this new report says that increasing taxes or tariffs on Chinese goods would cost a U.S. family of four almost $800 a year and could lead to nearly a million jobs being lost. And that list of appliances that could be impacted by these increased tariffs, like air conditioners, I mentioned appliances, including refrigerators, parts that go into cars, bicycles, clothing. I mean, it's like everything, cosmetics, electronics, even some foods, furniture, handbags. Oh my God, home improvement items. Yeah, Enrique is going to love that. And it may be things that you don't notice. It may be like a dollar here or $5 there or, $80 if we're talking about a big appliance. But these types of like it may sound like very abstract, China US trade war, but it's really hitting our wallets now.
I remember even when I was getting my cabinets, the guy was like, okay, so at any moment, they're gonna send me a fax or whatever saying that, that there is the price has increased because of increased taxes on what we're ordering. So he was like, so as soon as you know what you want, let me know. I remember that was like a very real thing as I was like deciding what to get, that at any moment it could go up significantly. And so, it affects everyone, whether you're renovating, whether you're just getting your car fixed. So, that's like, I mean, to quote the great Rodney King, can't we all just get along?
No, not today. Not today, apparently. So, think about that, man. Look what y'all's president is doing.
Oh, like not my president.
Well.
Not
That's your buzzworthy. Anything else you want to chat about?
There is one thing, but I think I'm gonna make my brown braid.
Ooh, tease us. Okay, fine.
Oh,
That's cool. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And we're back. We're black. We're brown.
Oh, okay. We were brown and now we're brown. I can't even do it. I don't have that octave
Yeah, I had that lower. I didn't even know that I
register.
had a deeper voice until someone was like, I was like maybe in middle school. They're like, Tiffany, you have a deep voice. And I'm like, do I?
You do. I think that's what makes our show easy to listen to, is because we sound so different. I have the more high
Like,
pitched voice. Ooh, it's hard to hear myself sometimes.
really? I feel like I can go high because sometimes when I get excited, I'm definitely, but I didn't, I'm like, I have a deep, because one time I remember, I didn't realize, I guess, too, till high school, and guys, if I was like sneaking and talking on the phone to a boy, and they'd be like, ooh, Tiffany. And I'm like, what?
What?
Right? And they thought I was trying to like
They're
put
like,
on. I'm like, I
exactly.
was literally just talking. I wasn't trying to be sassy. Not trying to be sassy. I'm 14. So what's up next? Are we gonna we do brown break brown boost now,
Brown
correct?
break, brown boost. Yep.
Ooh, good. Brown break brown boost. So are you gonna break or are you gonna boost?
I'm gonna take a break, an
I'm
easy
gonna break.
break.
Okay, I'm gonna take a break too, but I'm gonna go first.
Okay, dibs, you got it.
I should have listened to my sister, but I didn't. So I use Robinhood to like just buy stocks, not like seriously. Like, I'm not spending tens of thousands of dollars, just sometimes a few hundred here, a few hundred there. And so typically my sister, Carol, she is the fourth. I'm like third, fourth in line. And Carol like studies market and like, you know, she doesn't really invest right now because she's like saving. She's got two kids. So hoo-cha, who has the extra income? But she definitely studies the market, and we kind of have like a group chat where she'll say something like Beyond Meat, for example, just IPO'd. And so, I bought some shares and, I did pretty good. I mean, like, you know, it's definitely, it's, I didn't buy as quickly as I should have, because they're like doubled that day. I think they opened at like 45 or like 25 or something like that. And they closed at like 70.
And Beyond Meat, I actually just had my first Beyond hamburger by accident, and it was the first I'd ever heard of them, and now I heard that they're going public, and it was like all the news today. But they're like, well, vegan meats, right?
Yes, but they already went public and they did very well. They IPO'd very well, like they like quadrupled or tripled. So Uber was coming out, and I think my mom put in the group chat. I didn't even know she was in the group chat. I was like, Sylvia, what are you doing here? She was like, hey, heard that Uber is IPOing today, you know, like initial public offering, for those of you asking what IPO means. Should we buy? You know, because I put Robinhood on everyone's phone, including my mom and my dad. And so now, you know, Sylvia thinks she's doing something. And my sister, Carol, was like, I don't know. You know, it's not looking good after doing my research. I likely wouldn't. I didn't listen. I was like, shoot, girl, let me get 5 of these shares. And so I think I got 5 shares at $42 a piece, you know, feeling my beat, you know, I was like, I mean, like I said, I'm not spending a ton of money, but still it's money. So they, of course, had the worst IPO in history, the worst IPO in history. Like it opened at, what did it open at? I think it opened at 41 or something like that. It closed it's like right now at 39. The worst IPO in history. I mean, everyone is like, sheesh.
I'm sure there's worse IPOs.
No. I think like it was like Facebook didn't do well when it first IPO'd, but it was like I think I read somewhere that it was like the worst IPO. Yeah, I know. So I mean, it wasn't. I'm not even being sarcastic. I really believe that. That's what I read somewhere. Uber IPO. Let me see what it's coming up. But yeah, that it was really, really, really. It was really bad.
Lyft had a bad IPO too. And that's one of the reasons why when Uber, well, I don't really ever get that excited about IPOs and like invest in. And I think my husband, he's like invested in a couple recently, not a ton, but a little bit. But yeah, like seeing Lyft and Uber, and they're also older companies. And I feel like the shine has kind of worn off the rideshare industry, and especially like Uber's, all the workplace, you know, things that came to light about like sexual harassment and how they have like a toxic work culture. I don't know. So I was watching their IPO, and that, I mean, at least you only got 5 shares.
Yeah. That's, and I usually only get like, you know, like literally, like I just use Robinhood to kind of like, you know, practice and play. So I was like, you know, I'm going to get 5. And of course, Carol, I didn't tell my, I hope group chat is not listening. So like at the end of the day, you know, when the market closed, Carol, like, you know, she always does like a screenshot, like open and close. She was like, you're welcome, guys. They had a terrible IPO. I was like, hey, yeah, yeah, I bought. So Carol, if you're listening, you're right. But she told us, she was like, just wait. I don't think it's going to do well today. And, you know, I don't know how Uber is going to do overall, because the truth is a lot of these companies are not profitable. And it's such a strange culture where not being profitable is actually okay. And I don't think people get it. Like, so for me, regular people, when they have their business, if you're not profitable, that's really bad, because that means you're not making any money. That means, you know, you spent $100,000 to make $90,000. You're not profitable. But for these big mega companies, they're okay with not being profitable. Amazon was not profitable until like recently. Like most of these mega companies are not making a profit. Instead, they are valued. Like, you know, they have this valuation, meaning that it's somewhere along the line, the market or whatever has decided that this company is worth this amount of money. So in their mind, it's okay that they're not making profit as a company, but that if they were to sell it, they would get their money back plus some. And so many of these companies don't belong to the original owners. If you guys ever listen to How I Built This, they're like a podcast about like business of people who start businesses and they're really successful now, like Whole Foods. And so people want these huge valuations, but more and more it's all smoke and mirrors, you know? And so, and people will give away, like, I don't have any venture capital money. So venture capitalists are people who give you money for your company, typically in exchange for a piece of your company, because the thought is that one day you'll sell and then they'll get their money back plus a lot. So sometimes they're okay with you not being profitable, but it's a very strange culture in business now where there are people who I listen to on How I Built This who now only own 4%, 5% of their company. And I'm like, so you started this whole dream. You worked really hard. You busted your behind to start the Budgetista, let's say, and you sold pieces of it off. So, I mean, you can grow because you need money to grow and you didn't have the money yourself. And now as Tiffany, the Budgetista, I only own 4% of my baby. And so when we sell it for $100 million, I get $4 million. It just seems crazy. I'm not down for that. I own 100% of the Budgetista, and I know I'm not as big, obviously, as Uber. And so it's one of the reasons why people do that is because they want to be able to scale and grow quickly. So you get a lot of money, you invest into the company to grow quickly. But I don't know. It seems weird to me. So that's why my brown break is like, is inflated companies, because I just don't see the point, I guess. But I mean, people like Jeff Bezos is like the richest man in the country. So clearly he knows something that I do. I just don't get how running a non-profitable business is like the goal, you know?
Did he invest in Uber?
Jeff Bezos?
Yeah.
He's the CEO of Amazon.
I know. I was just wondering why. What did he have to do with?
Oh, no. I was just saying that like Amazon is not profitable, or was like just recently profitable, even though it's like this huge conglomerate. It's like, this is a man who's like the
Seriously?
Richest man.
Seriously? Amazon hasn't been profitable?
It wasn't profitable for a long time. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I mean, like more recently than not, you know? And I was like, well, I don't get it. You know? I don't get it. So.
Crazy. Well, that's why, you know, play money in Robinhood, like money you're not going to miss.
Yeah. So like, for example, Amazon, it took Amazon 14 years to be profitable. And I'm like, that's a long time, you know?
Yeah. So you have to have the stomach for it.
Yeah, you do. But sometimes I feel like profits are not the problem, you know?
Yeah.
Like that they're not aiming for profit. They're aiming for scale and growth and selling. That's what's happening right now, is that people are like, grow big, grow fast, sell, make my money. And like, I'm like, okay. But I mean, I don't know that that's sustainable. And maybe that's a bubble that's happening, you know?
I mean, it just seems like these tech companies are having a harder time. Like they were the unicorns 10 years ago. And I think just the shine has worn off, you know, like even Pinterest went public recently and they've walked back, you know, their early gains and stuff. So I don't know. I'm just going to stick to my S&P 500 index. Fine. Yeah, that's fine. I recently liquidated my Robinhood account because I was like, I'm good. I made like $100 and I'm like, okay, that's enough.
I'm up. I'm like, you know what, Tiffany? Overall, I think if I look at all, I'm looking at it right. I'm up. So I started it August 5th, 2016, and I'm up 23%. So I'm like, I'm good. I made about $1,200. So I'm like, okay. Yeah, this is kind of like my little play. Yeah. So, but yeah, I definitely was like, ugh, I should have listened to Carol.
You just have a stomach for the long term, you know?
Exactly. But what about you? What are you breaking for?
I've got to break anti-vaxxers. I know there's not necessarily a personal finance element. I mean, if you don't have insurance and your kid gets measles because some man or woman decided not to vaccinate her child, then yes, that could cost you money. But I just can't believe we're still having to debate the merits of vaccinations, in that there are so many studies that, you know, researchers, like science, has shown that these inaccurate, falsified, you know, reports that showed that vaccinations are linked to autism have been debunked up and down the world by all kinds of very, very smart people. And still, you know, there people are like, this most recent outbreak is still raging on, hundreds of cases across the country, and like especially in New York. They're actually targeting Orthodox Jewish communities, which I find troubling. And you know, heard this really sad report that on a bus, like a Jewish, Orthodox Jewish woman was with her children, and like some people gestured to each other and like moved seats away from them, thinking that they you know, are part of this anti-vaccination movement. And it's not all Orthodox Jewish people, but it's just like, it's, you know, there's, they're actually, this group is distributing like old school, just like paper pamphlets with, you know, false information about vaccinations in this community. And I don't have any, all I want to say is just break it. Like, vaccinate, just don't, you know, make your decisions about healthcare based on science. How about that? Just read the facts from unbiased sources.
And the thing is that, like, so what happens, like, you know, like, these are things, you know, I remember I used to get my it's MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. And I remember that because when I taught preschool, you know, before kids could be, you know, enrolled, they had to have the MMR shot because, you know, you don't, I mean, kids sneeze in your mouth, okay? Like, boldface. And so,
I know. Why?
I can't tell you how many times a kid has sneezed in that face, and I'm like, I guess I'll die today. If there's already, you're already going to get the cold, you're already going to get a flu, and I know that parents are doing it, obviously, because those who don't think that they're protecting their children. But here's the thing, they're like, as they're going to be places that they're not going to be allowed to go because people check for those. Like, I had to have my MMR shot before I could become a teacher. And I'm only assuming that there are some positions where those things are checked for. You're not going to be able to go to public school ever. A friend of mine told me that he didn't vaccinate his children, and they were homeschooled. And he was the little girl was visiting up here in Jersey, and she got really sick. And the parents were like, "Okay, we're on our way." She's like, "Yeah, no, this baby's like really sick." And they're like, "We're on our way. Don't take her." They didn't believe in hospitals and stuff. She took her to the hospital, and they were basically like, "You got here in time. This baby has pneumonia, and it was not doing well." So what was the plan? To have her die at home? You know what I mean? I just, at some point you have to ask yourself, like, it's, you know, doing what's best for your children is doing what's best for your children, not just your ideology, you know?
You can raise your kids however you want, but when it impacts other people's lives, that, you know, if your child gets ill and then spreads that around, it's not just your problem and how you raise you, because that's the defense. It's like, it's our body, we can choose what to do with it. It's the same reason you should get tested for STDs and wear condoms and all that, because it's not just you when you're having sex, you can pass things on to other people. And vaccinations, I mean, it's right on par with that. If you're an HIV carrier and you're having sex, I think you can get, like, isn't that a crime?
Yes. Having unprotected sex knowingly without telling folks. It sure is a crime.
Right. So, I mean, in my mind, I haven't really thought that through, but it seems like it could be on par with something like that. Why don't we have the same expectation for vaccinations? I mean, there's a reason people came up with vaccinations. These are diseases that, you know, need to be inoculated. So why wouldn't you protect your child and other children from it? And, I'm stumped, but I'd love to, you know, if you guys feel, I'm curious from our listeners, you know, how do you feel about vaccinations? What have you heard? I don't have like school age children. So if you guys have any stories of what you've heard or any controversy in your schools about vaccinations, hit us up, you know, shoot us a message on Instagram or at Brand Ambition Podcast, or send us an email at brandambitionpodcast@gmail.com. Which is an amazing segue for questions.
Questions that need answers. As Dustin Ross, he's funny. He's I did this podcast called The Friend Zone. He always does this thing that's called Questions That Need Answers. QB&A.
Well, y'all made me break my Instagram. You know, I told you I was taking a break from Instagram specifically for Mental Health Awareness Month, which is May. But I didn't realize how many of you guys have been sending us questions on the gram. So I slid into my DMs. I ignored my own personal page. I didn't scroll, but I went right to your questions. And we've got like a dozen, maybe a couple dozen questions in here from people. So let's read a couple real quick. The first question is from Danny B. She actually just left this an hour ago. So hot question, hot off the press. She says, "Hey, hey, hey," and her budget needs to voice. How do you know, we were just talking about this, how do you know when you're financially stable enough to begin investing in rental properties? Thanks in advance. Tiffany, you are about to become potentially, right? Did you buy the rental property already or no? I forget.
You said, did I do what?
Buy the rental, didn't you buy an investment property?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she wants to know, how do you know when you're financially stable enough to start investing in rental properties?
So I would say, well, one, you don't have to be debt free. So don't think that like, oh, you have no debt whatsoever. So we could take that out of your mind. If it is in your mind, I would say one, your credit is decent because you are, you know, you likely may have to take out like a loan, whether it's to buy the property or to fix it up. So I would say 750 and above because you want to get the highest interest rate. Two, you have savings. So you want to have at minimum 3 months worth of savings, but ideally more if you're going to invest in rental property, because you want to be able to have, like a little bit of a cushion and backup. I would say 6 months to a year, but at minimum 3 months, depending on what kind of job you have. If you're a nurse, 3 months might be more than enough because it's very easy to find a nursing position because they're always in demand. If you're an engineer, I would say more because it's not always as easy, especially if you're a woman, to find an engineering job. So that's two, you have savings. Three, you've got like a budget that you actually stick to. Like you have, there's money at the end of the month. So if you're short every month during your budget, you want to get yourself in a space where you're like, oh, we have a budget, we stick to it. We have a savings plan, we stick to it. We have a debt plan, we stick to it. It's automated. And we have, you know, decent credit. Once you're kind of there, oh, and you're also contributing to your retirement account. If you're doing those things, then you're kind of like, it's not that you reach perfection, but you have a plan and you're in it and you're sticking to it for the most part. So then it's time to, and so retirement is investing for life. But like that kind of investing, real estate investing and anything beyond that is investing for wealth. So that's what I say anyway. So, you know, everyone should be investing for life. So like right away, you should be investing for retirement because God willing, we'll all get older. But once you have the foundation that I just mentioned, then investing for wealth is, you know, the next most logical step. So then you can get, you know, jiggy with it. I mean, so that's where Superman and I are now. Like, you know, we bought our first property. We haven't done anything with it, which has been, it's just been, the other house has just been, whew, like a task. So once the other house we've moved in, we'll start to really work on the investment property. But I definitely have my eye out on other pieces of investment property that might be a good match. But it's a great way to grow wealth, honestly. And it's a great way to grow wealth outside of the traditional investing. If you like to have wealth that you can physically kind of see.
And you guys bought that outright in cash, right?
Yeah, because it was $10,000. So it was like a
foreclosure. Yeah, mm-hmm. If I was able to, and I think in a couple of years we'll be ready, like if we had enough cash to buy, like I always think about Georgia. I feel like I still have family there, and I think about buying like a little apartment or a house in Georgia and renting it out. And that's just a more reasonable place I could afford to pay cash for something, because mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to have another mortgage payment. So that's something that I consider, and just the stomach for it and like the time, because you do need to be like, if you're going to rent it out, because she's talking about rental properties. I don't know if you guys were thinking about renting.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, whether you hire a property management company to do like find tenants for you and all that, it's still going to take like some bandwidth. So, and I'd want to like do my research and make sure that I was making like something that was a sound investment, because it can be a nice source of income, but not if it's, you know, if you choose the wrong location, or if you don't buy something that's in a location where there are renting, you know, a lot of renters, people who want to rent. So it's next level, but I agree with Tiffany, you know, focus on that retirement fund savings first. And then when you feel comfortable that you're still able to keep that up and invest in, you know, an additional property, then that's probably a good time.
Yeah. And also too, just like start doing your research now, because you know, just because you don't have the funds now, let's just say you're like, my credit score is not where I want it to be. We still are maybe a year off before we have enough of, you know, savings. This is the perfect time then to do your research, because either way, you're going to have to do your research, and it takes time anyway. So use this time to really do some research about what kind of property you want. Maybe go to an auction just to sit in and see how it goes. You know, start talking to realtors about your interest in finding a good realtor. If you're going to be doing fixing up things, start asking friends about their contractor. So doing your research ahead of time is really going to save you time when you're in the financial position to move.
100%. Well, thank you for your question, Danny B.
Yeah, it's a great question.
Let's see. Scrolling through the gram. Okay, so how about this question from Yuriana GT? Pretty name. I think that's her name. Another hey. I hope you're doing great. Love you both. I have a quick question regarding secured credit cards. Can we open more than one? And if I do, will it actually help me increase my credit score faster? I keep going up and down on my credit score, mostly because of my debt to available credit limit ratio, her utilization ratio. I want to buy a home and I don't have a good enough credit score. At least I don't think. So what can we tell her about secured cards and whether or not you can open more than one?
You can open up more than one secured credit card. But I mean, I guess she's saying she's opening it up for the purpose to raise her credit score.
Yeah. So she wants to raise her credit score. She's trying to get approved for a house and she doesn't mention what her score is, but she doesn't think it's high enough to qualify for a mortgage quite yet.
Well, here's the thing though. So typically when you're trying to prove yourself credit worthy, they're looking for diversity. So opening up two secured cards is opening up two of the same type of debt. It's called revolving debt. So it's not really going to help necessarily. So instead, I would open up a secured card. I mean, and know this, that you don't want to, you should not incur new debt at least within 3 months of buying a house. So I hope buying a house is maybe 12 months away. So mm-hmm. I hope, because you're not going to open up a credit card and get a house next month, because you're going to have a heart attack that you open up a credit card so quickly to getting a mortgage, because it's like telling them, I know I'm going to borrow from you, but I just borrowed from somebody else. They're like, nah, girl. So it'll get you a secure credit card. Use what I call the jump like Jordan method. Put Netflix or something under $20 on it. Let it automatically charge that card. And then let your bank account automatically pay it off. Just do bill pay at your bank account. So here's the trick, though. You want to pay after the statement date. Just call them and say, when's my statement date? That's just the day they issue the statement. And when they issue you the statement, that means that they told the credit bureau. What's her name again?
Yuriana.
Yuriana. Yuriana has, I'm going to call you Yuri. I like that. No, let me not do that, because I hate it when people do that. So Yuriana has used her card. So pay after the statement date so you know that it's been kind of reported to the credit bureaus it's been used, but by the due date. So, if it's due on the 5th, pay, by the 5th, So if you do that with your, that's an automated kind of system. Netflix charges that card, bank account pays it off, automated, put that card up. So that's one. And then if you want to open up another kind of line of credit to show I'm responsible, another credit card is not going to show that. Instead, you can get something called self-lender. And those are, what kind of loan is that called, Mandy, when you have installment loan?
Right? Yeah, so, installment loan, loan.
Exactly. So revolving debt is a credit card. An installment loan, think about it as a car note or student loans. That means you're paying back a loan in an installment. And so self-lender lets you do a faux installment loan. And the way it works is that you say, hey, self-lender, I want to borrow the smallest amount of money, which I think is $500. Self-lender said, sure. They don't give you the 500, which is great. They put it in a money market account or savings account for you. And then you pay back that 500 as if you received it. So every month you pay back $41 or something to that effect. They take a small fee. The fee equates to maybe $70 for the whole year. You pay a small fee in that paying back of every month. And at the end of the year, it's yay, Yuriana not only borrowed this money, she paid it back in full. Woohoo. So, and she paid it back. She paid all of her monthly payments on time. So automate those monthly payments. And I think self-lender does that for you anyway. And so you get to prove to the lender, to not self-lender, but to your mortgage lender, hey, I can borrow money two different ways and be responsible. And at the end, when you're done with self-lender, they give you back your $500. So that's what's so great about self-lender, is that you get to kind of show the credit bureau and other lenders, I can borrow money in installments. And then with a secured card, hey, I can borrow revolving money and be responsible with it. So that's what I would do. But to me, it's probably going to take, because self-lender takes takes a year for it to be finished. So in the meantime, though, like I mentioned before, do your research on neighborhood, on what kind of mortgage you want to get. Are there mortgage programs? Maybe join NACA, N-A-C-A. NACA is this free federal program that helps first-time home buyers. That's just someone who has not owned a home in the last 3 years. And so I would do my prep work. So by the time, my credit score is 750 and above, you're ready to rock and roll because you have all the knowledge.
Yeah, there are some mortgage programs where you can get a mortgage, for the FHA loan, for example, as low as 500, with a credit score of as low as 500 and a low down payment. But you just have, it's the higher your score is, the better off you are, because you're going to be able to get a rate on your mortgage. And think about 30 years of paying interest. So you want the lowest rate possible. And the higher your score is, the lower your rate is. So that's awesome. And I don't know if you mentioned credit unions, but my dad definitely has had success getting a small personal loan from a credit union. They have more traditional kind of credit builder loans that they can offer sometimes. And if you have poor credit, that can be a good option too.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question, Yuriana. And let's say one more, one kind of home investment related question. This is something I've been thinking about a lot too. This question is from Laura on Instagram. My question is, I own a home. I have no other debt. Would you recommend that I pay off my home faster by making extra payments each month? Or should I save the money for an investment property? What would be the best use of my money? Thanks, ladies.
Ooh, these questions be good. What say you, Mandra?
Well, I was just thinking about my mortgage. And so generally when you have I don't know what your mortgage rate is, but if you got a mortgage in the last year or two, it's probably like high 3% or low 4%, which is a really low rate. And if you think about, you know, this, I answered a question from a family member recently because they were like, should I just put all this? He had a windfall coming and he wanted to know if he should put it toward his mortgage or open up an IRA or something like that. And we compared the interest rate on his mortgage to what he could be earning if he invested in the market based on past returns. And clearly you can stand to earn more if you invest in the market based on past returns, potentially based on past returns. You know, you're probably going to do better than 4% if you're investing for the long term. When it comes to choosing between, you know, paying off your mortgage or investing in another property, you have to look at the data and like look at, you know, what you could potentially stand to gain by investing in another property. And would it be worth more financially in terms of your investment returns than what you could save by paying off your mortgage faster? There's no rush to pay off your mortgage, especially if you've got that. That's what I tell myself. You know, if you've got that low rate, you know, you've got 20, I've got 29 years now or 28 years now to still pay it down. But I have been thinking, I really would love to be able to pass on a paid off property to my future kids, or, you know, or to have in my family. That's something that my family's never had, a paid off piece of property. So that's becoming a goal for me, but I still don't think for me right now it makes sense to throw all the money I have at my mortgage. I'm, like I said, recovering from the remodel still, and we're rebuilding so that we have a nice chunk of change. And when I have that nice chunk of change, I'm hoping by then I will know what I want to do with it. And it may be investing in a property, and it may be taking a big chunk out of my mortgage.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's hard because it's like, this is both like a technical financial question, but it's also an emotional question, right? Because I mean, I don't, you know, I could I have used the money that I used to purchase and renovate the house, you know, toward like investing? Yes. But after losing my house, my first property to foreclosure, I was kind of like, yeah, I kind of want to have a place that they can't snatch from me, you know?
Yeah.
and it still was an investment. So don't, here's the thing, buying your home, even if you're buying it for emotional reasons, it should still make financial sense. Your emotions don't get to erase the fact that it has to make financial sense. So I purchased that the house, but it was also a foreclosure, the first property, and it was worth double what we paid for. So I was conscious of, yes, I'm paying for cash, but I'm also paying for, if I were to resell it right now on the market, I would get double back. Ideally, when I think about debt, here's the advice I've finally come to really like absorb from my parents that I didn't really listen to when I was younger, is that focusing on debt is really not the goal. If you focus on debt, you'll be debt free. But guess what? My nephew Roman, he's 3. Guess what? He's debt free. He's still broke. Like, debt free does not mean anything. You know what I mean? But like, instead, you want to focus on growing wealth, because when you focus on growing wealth, you get both. You get wealth and you can get debt free. I finally listened to that lesson when last year I paid off my student loan debt, one lump sum, but I could have paid it off earlier. I had the money, but I decided to instead invest back into growing my business. I really wanted to grow from 6 figures to 7 figures a year. And so I used part of my student loans for $52,000, something like that. And so I instead really focused putting my money back into the business. And now we're multi 7-figure a year. Like one of the businesses is multi 7-figure a year. And so as a result, last year, even though I had the money earlier, last year, I was able to say, okay, student loan debt, I finally have more than enough of a buffer. The business is doing well. I'm going to pay you off in full. because I focused on growing wealth. So the wealth took care of the debt. I did not focus on the debt. But that took a lot of retraining mentally. And so that's like a piece of advice that I would give you.
Yeah. And if you're thinking about an investment property too, and if you have a property or a budget in mind where, okay, if you know that if you save diligently for the next 3 to 5 years, you'll have enough cash to pay for an investment property outright. And then you're going to rent it out and you'll have rental income, which could then help you pay your mortgage down, plus be a source of, passive income in the future, then maybe that equation makes more sense than it's like the temporary not paying down your mortgage, but, building up toward that investment in an investment property. Of course, Tiffany and I are not financial experts or financial planners or investment advisors. All of our advice is just based on our own experiences. So, when it comes down to making that final decision, you'll probably want to consult a financial advisor or do your own research. But that's just the way that, I've thought about investment properties in the past, and Tiff too.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so do you not like when people shorten your name to Tiffany? Because I do that. I do that all the time.
No, that I don't mind. It was my African name when people would like make up their own. Because it was like when they used to make up their own version of it because they couldn't say it. And I'm like, yeah, that's not it.
That triggered.
So, yeah.
My friend Jess asked me years ago not to call her Jess, and I never listened.
Meanwhile, you just said my friend Jess, which is hilarious.
I know. I don't know if she remembers that, saying that she didn't like people calling her Jess, but I was like, sorry, Jess.
Like for me, Tiff to Tiffany, I don't, that's fine. But like my African name was Adochi, and people would be like, Adochi? Azuz? I'm like, I'm just going to call you L. I'm like, or you're just going to call me Adochi. It's 3 syllables. Adochi. It's not that hard. And so that used to really trigger me. But no, Tiff to Tiffany. I'm like, literally, that's a name I picked when I was 9 years old. And my dad's like, pick a name. We're staying in America. And I was like, okay. I mean, I was born here, but my dad always thought that we would move to Nigeria. We'd be raised in Nigeria. But then Nigeria took a turn. And he was like, yeah, that plan's next. Pick you an English name. And I was like, ooh, Renee. He was like, no. I was like, what about
the 80s?
I know. Yes. Right. And so I was like, what about, I wanted Renee. Then I wanted Jenny. Thank God he nixed that one. He's like, Tiffany, be serious. So I was like, Tiffany's nice. And he was like, and I literally didn't even think about it. I just said, I kind of like Tiffany. He's like, okay, that's it. I'm like, wait, can I think on it? So that was it. Tiffany it is. And Tiffany it always has been. It's still weird when my sisters call me. They only call me Tiffany more. I call my sisters by their African name, except for Lisa, because Lisa was born after the switch. So she was born Lisa. But it's weird. My sisters call me my American name more than anybody else because of my business. So everyone will come to them and be like, oh, my God, I love your sister, Tiffany. The Budgetistas helped me. So they call me Tiffany more. But I don't call my sisters by their American name unless we're saying it out of jest. Like I said, Carol, but that's not her. I don't ever call Carol. I call her by her African name. But yeah, so when someone calls me by my African name, I'm like, yo, somebody did that the other day, maybe a few months ago. And I looked at them like, wait, I know you because, and it was like, yeah,
you know, my parents.
I know we went to elementary school together. I'm like, we sure did because that was my name in elementary school. I mean, it's still it now, but. So when someone's like, hey, Adochi, I'm like, wait.
Such a cute name.
It is, right? It means God's blessing. People got it wrong. And I'm like, it's not even that hard to say.
Do you think you'll give your kids Nigerian names?
I think at least one of their names will be. Because there's some Nigerian names that I get it for the ease of being into this darn dusty country. I mean, America, sometimes you
can just. Is that what we are?
It could be a lot here.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, with every country, but yeah. So I think I would do a mix. I love the name Adeze because Ada is firstborn daughter. That's what if my sister Karen, somebody would be like, will ask my dad, oh, is this your Ada? That means your daughter, but firstborn. And then Eze is king. So Adeze means daughter of the king, which is princess. So you'll see a lot of Nigerians or Igbo. Nigerians will have Adeze. So I really like the name Adeze. So if I have a daughter, maybe Adeze. But there's
one of my best friends is Nigerian. I love her name is Tolu Lope. I just love saying it. She goes by Tolu, but I'm like, no, Tolu Lope.
Yeah, Tolu Lope. It's probably Tolu Lope. So she's Yoruba. So Tolu is a very common prefix. Yorubas use a lot of prefixes like Tolu, Ola. So whenever I hear Tolu, Ola, Olu, those are used typically Yoruba names. And Igbos use a lot of post kind of fix like Chi. I think Olu is God in Yoruba and Chi is God in Igbo. So you'll hear Adochi, like chi gozi, like, you know. So whenever I hear chi, I'm like, oh, you're likely Igbo, because Nigerians tend to be very religious, so they'll use God in children's names a lot. But like, I can typically tell by someone's name, like, you know, if they're Nigerian, if they're Igbo, Yoruba, or something else. But yeah, I mean, our names are beautiful, and it's just, I'm actually glad that people don't call me that. So like, if you see me in the street, I mean, honestly, if you're not going to say it right, I don't want you to say it, because it's not cute to me, you know? Yeah. Like, I feel protective over it. I don't want to be like, Adichie. I'm like, yeah, just call me Tiffany, because I'm not going to respond to the missing of my beautiful African name.
Fair enough. Don't call me Amanda. It's Amanda. Just kidding. Not at all the same. Don't call me Mandy with a Y. Damn it.
I'm like, wait, you're not Mandy with a Y. You're like, I'm not.
Oh my God. I still have relatives. You put that on my cards. I'm like, just come on.
I'm your relative.
I literally, you know, whatever. It's fine. I'm used to it. It's cool. All right. Well, that's our show, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks for your questions. I'll be checking the gram. You know, we'll come. I'll meet you guys where you are. We got way more questions on the gram than through ours. Are we old? Is email no longer a thing? Like, come on.
I think people still email.
I mean, email still is a good way to reach us. It sure is easier to keep track on email. brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up directly. Also on the gram, send me a DM. Just don't tag us in your stories, because I have to view those within 24 hours or they disappear. And I'm constantly clicking and I'm like, oh, I can't see it anymore. So send us a DM and I'll check those. We're at Brown Ambition Podcast on Instagram.
Yeah, this was a good show. I feel good.
I feel great. All right. Well, go have a good rest of your week and we'll see you guys next week.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.